Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of What's It Like, where I interview people from all over the place about a very specific life experience that they have had. As always, my typical disclaimer, this is one person's experience with this kind of thing in their lives. Somebody else may have experienced something similar and have a very different story to tell, and that's okay. Everybody has their own experiences, but we're here to see what it might be like to go through something like this. So I want to go ahead and welcome our guest for today. Thank you for joining us, Krista.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. All right. Go ahead and tell our listeners in a sentence or two, what is the experience that you're going to be sharing with us today?
Sure. So I am here because I have a sitting disability, which means I never sit down.
When I saw that you were willing to speak about this, I thought I really want to hear about this because that's something that I don't have any experience with. So tell me, let's go back to the beginning. When did you first notice symptoms and when did they get bad enough to seek medical treatment for them?
Sure. So I started having problems. I remember the date very specifically. It was April 7th of 2017. And I remember this. I was on a combination work and vacation trip to Scotland. I was hanging out at my sister's house and, you know, April 8th was my birthday and we had a trip to Edinburgh planned. And I remember just laying in bed and I kept cramping terribly and my muscles would twitch and I just couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. And so the next day I remember just being, you know, Edinburgh was great, but I was completely sleep deprived and wondering what was up with this. And at first, you know, I thought, you know, I had gone to the UK before and spent 6 months there as an exchange student and I had some problems with cramps. And it turned out to be, you know, I just wasn't drinking enough milk. So for this particular trip, I came so prepared. I had my calcium supplements, you know, I was eating plain Marmite just with a spoon, just eating bananas, and a cocoa powder for the magnesium, trying to get that electrolyte balance. And then I still started having all these weird twitches and cramps. And I was like, what the heck is up with that? So I get back to the States and I was expecting, you know, I'm back to my regular life. You know, things will go back to normal, but it didn't. And as time went on over the next few months, it just seemed to get worse and worse. And it would just be like this crazy sensation of bugs crawling around in my legs, you know, every time I would lay down and the closer I got to sleep, the worse it would get. I was getting incredibly sleep deprived and I was just at the end of my rope, not really sure what to do, what was wrong. That's when I started really doing the round of doctor treatments and everything. So I started out going to an urgent care clinic and that was a total waste of time. Mm-hmm. I think the doctor told me, well, have you considered that it's an electrolyte imbalance? Thank you, doctor. It never occurred to me. But it took a few months and I finally realized myself the year before I had herniated a disc and I had an episode of sciatica, which is the sciatic nerve is the biggest nerve in your body and it starts in your low back and it runs through your leg. So I herniated a disc and just suffered, you know, in the middle of the night, I woke up in the most excruciating pain I've ever felt. You know, I thought I was going to die at first, you know, like there was a sensation of being stabbed all over inside my leg. And fortunately, I was dating a surgical resident at the time and he, you know, talked to his dad who was also a doctor. They figured out what it was, advised me, you know, just wait it out. It will probably go away and it sucks, but you can get through it. And knowing that, you know, I calmed down and was like, okay, I can wait it out. So as I was having all these cramps and strange sensations, and as I had a lot of time where I was just laying awake at night, not sleeping and pondering what was wrong with me, it occurred to me, you know, I'm getting all those twitches sort of along that same path where I was feeling all that sciatic pain a year before. And so that's where I kind of put it together. And I went through the round of, you know, tons of specialists, tons of back pain treatment. And I won't even bother you with that whole story right now because it was really a lot. And anybody who's probably had chronic back pain or sciatica knows what that's like.
Gosh. Okay. So you started kind of realizing some patterns, something that maybe got you on the right track. Where did this ultimately land after the round of doctors?
Right. So, you know, like I said, I visited physical rehabilitation specialists, some osteopaths, a couple of neurologists, a primary care doctor, and I don't even remember everyone else, did a couple rounds of physical therapy, epidural injections. I even had surgery, and that was back on July 31st of 2018. And none of that did any good. And so, you know, There came a point, and this was probably February of 2019, last year. I flew to the Mayo Clinic. I'd heard they had a great reputation. I went through the whole investigation. And the Mayo Clinic is fantastic, by the way. I was really impressed with everybody there. But even they really didn't have an answer. They couldn't tell me what was wrong or what I could do to fix it. And at that point, I had spent so much time and energy and money on doctor's appointments, you know, just to not have it turn into anything. And I was done. I was done with medical treatment. I was done with doctors. So there was a while where I just sort of concentrated on, you know what, I know my body, I know certain things. I know that when I sit down, this hurts. So I'm going to eliminate sitting. I know that if I drink caffeine for whatever reason, that makes me feel worse. So I'm not going to drink coffee. And doing things like that to just try to help myself. And then earlier this year, it would have been this spring, I got some books by this doctor out of Canada. His name is Stuart McGill. And he has a book for the lay public called Back Mechanics. So I ordered that, and I wasn't really expecting much because I've read a lot of books about back pain. But this one, I read it and I just tore through because there was so much good information explaining, you know, this is the anatomy of your spine. These are the kinds of forces that are put on it to cause that sort of injury. These are the sorts of positions that you're going to have pain in. And then this is what you do to treat that condition. And, you know, it was just like, wow, this is like, I didn't think any doctor actually understood how back pain worked or where it came from. And I say back pain, even though I was feeling it in my leg, because sciatica is lumped in with back pain. But I was starting to think that, you know, modern medicine just doesn't understand this. And now I was reading all this information where there was this very clear line of evidence between, you know, this is the force that you're under, this is what happens to the tissue in your back, this is what causes pain, this is how it heals, if it heals, these are potential other problems that you could have with your back afterwards, and this is what you do to treat it, and this is why. And after I read that Back Mechanic, I ordered the textbook, which is Low Back Disorders, and I read through, a lot more scientific detail in there, which I'm not a scientist, so I can't say that I understood all of it. But I understood enough to be able to have some good takeaways for myself and to at least have a better understanding of what is actually wrong. Why am I having this problem?
Okay. So you did some of this research on your own and found this information. So at that point, did you just like, from that point on, did you continue to just not go back, not pursue any official treatment, and just work on your own, on stuff sort of on your own?
Yeah, that's essentially it. And so kind of what I realized from reading these books, and so my particular problem, because there's many kinds of back injuries, and so I have a herniated disc, that's likely where my problems are coming from, and that's at that L5 S1 level between those two vertebrae. So basically I have a little bit of disc material that's poking out and kind of sticking under the nerve, and the nerve is catching on that a little bit. So the fix for that, and this is kind of one of those insights that I have, it's not stated in the book. But it's very much about, you know, these are the forces that are working on it. This is how tissues are aligning. And, you know, before that, everybody is saying, well, have you tried these supplements? Have you tried these drugs? Have you tried these injections? And after reading this, I'm like, you know, it doesn't make sense. Like, if the problem is mechanical, then why would the fix be chemical? so how do I, you know, how do I work with my body mechanics to actually treat that? And so then some of the pillars of things that I'm actually doing, and the great thing is they're all free. There's these series of three exercises, the big three, and that is the bird dog, the curl up, and the side plank, and I do those every day. I walk, and for me, I go longer than most people do. I find 2 to 3 hours is ideal. I mean, not everybody... That might change for different people. I practice good spine hygiene, and that's kind of a new term that I got. And it sounds weird, but basically the idea is when you move in different ways, like if I put on my socks or shoes, if I pick something up off the floor, if I'm putting away dishes, I'm just moving in a way where I keep my spine neutral and I'm not putting more force on it in a bad way than I have to. So it's just, you know, learning certain patterns of movement, like this is how you hinge your hips back to get down. This is how you do a lunge. You know, this is how you pick something up off the floor. And so by practicing that, I'm able to spare a lot of the pressure on my spine.
Okay. So it's more about, are these exercises about figuring out ways in which to move that don't catch the nerve or is about, is there any chance of like realigning things like in a sense to undo any of the damage that's been happening?
Yeah, that's a good point. So the point of the exercises, that's more about preventing further injury and keeping yourself from making that disc bulge or whatever your problem is actually worse. Because the point of that is, you have the spine, and a lot of people think, well, you need to be more flexible and your spine should be super flexible. And if you're a belly dancer or something, maybe that's true. But for most people, and you know, for me, I was probably definitely one, you can actually get injured if you are letting your spine absorb too many of the forces of, you know, if you bend over, if you're lifting a weight or something. And what should really be happening is you have muscles in your core, not necessarily the ones that you see as a six pack in a gym, but deeper muscles in your abdomen that should be supporting your spine and keeping it steady, sort of locking it in place. And they should be absorbing more of the forces. So for your core in your spine, and this is definitely true in my case, a lot of times it's better to work on stability in the spine. And then if you are an athlete, which I don't really consider myself one, although I do, you know, like doing some physical activity. But if you need power, like say you're a runner or a tennis player or whatever, let that power come from the joints, the arms and legs, and the limbs rather than your core. And your core should just be straight and stable and locked. So the point of the big three exercises is just to create that stability.
Okay. So finding more ways to support the spine so it doesn't have to be doing the things that's getting it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So you started doing this. How have you seen improvements?
It's actually been amazing. And I should point out one other thing, which isn't what I am doing. It's what I stopped doing. So I had before in, you know, tons of Googling, and of course found lots of references online. If this is great stretches for your sciatic nerve, I had this book on yoga for back pain. So I was doing, you know, half an hour of stretches every night, and especially hamstring stretches. I swore by it. That was making me feel better. And so part of this McGill program is, you know, he recommends, he says about stretching, a lot of times it feels good in the moment, you activate this stretch reflex, but you don't realize that you're actually damaging that nerve or irritating it further. And so later, after, you know, 20 minutes, an hour or so, it's actually going to make that nerve more painful. And so at first I was like, no, I can't possibly manage this without my stretching. You know, I need to stretch. What's going to happen? But after not doing that and following the other parts of this program, I mean, within a week, there was a very definite difference of like, I would lay in bed and, you know, I wouldn't have any twitching at all. I mean, I think it's been probably April since I've had a cramp. A lot of times I can just lay there and, you know, it's like I don't even have sciatica. And for me, when this has just been like a daily, all the time sort of thing, just to be able to lose that awareness of that nerve is just incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So have you seen, I love that. Yeah. The pain has died down when you're lying down and but you still aren't able to sit.
No. And you know, it's not really clear. It probably will be a while, as you can probably figure out. It's not like this is a magic fix where all of a sudden I'm going to return my back to this pristine condition that it was in before. It's not really like that. It's just more of preventing further injury and then minimizing the damage that's already been done. And the good news I learned is that, you know, over time, that disc should dry out and my spine should adjust so that pain should fade. I might have new sources of pain, but that current source of pain should go away. But I mean, we're talking, this could be years. Right. So in the meantime, I mean, it's definitely making a difference. Just my daily life has gotten so much easier to not have to focus on that all the time, to just be able to like lay someplace and be comfortable for a while, where it's, you know, I'm perfectly happy with my progress. And especially after dealing with pain for so long and trying so many things that don't work, I'm willing to have a little patience with this one.
Oh, absolutely.
That's, yeah.
You know, getting to be, find a position at all to be comfortable in is such a huge, that's, you know, I've dealt with chronic pain of my own and just finding that place where you can sit and, or lie down in your case and feel, so huge.
Yeah. Or even like
you can actually rest.
Yeah. That moment when you like lay down or, you know, in your case, sit down and just, you don't think about your pain is the first thought. It's, I mean, that's so refreshing.
Yeah. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how not being able to sit affects your life. What are some of the most difficult things that that most of us do on maybe a day-to-day basis that you have to either cannot do or have to adjust?
Yeah, so I suppose everything is a little bit too general than what you want to know.
maybe a couple of broad examples.
Yeah. Well, for some of the more obvious ones, travel is obviously very difficult. I mean, so I don't drive in my own car. My husband drives if I need to be anywhere. So I have a little ramp thing hooked up in the passenger seat, which I kind of ride around in. There are, I know other people with sitting disabilities who have rigged up, you know, maybe put a seatbelt in the back seat of their car so they can lay flat across the seat, or, you know, they lay in the back of an SUV. And I've tried things like that too. But for me, I do the ramp thing. So obviously, like when I was working in an office job, that was a huge problem because I did have a standing desk and that helped for a while, other than of course my legs got sore at the end of the day. But you don't think about, you know, if I went into a conference room or I needed to present something for a meeting or I needed to take notes during this other conversation, well, you know, no other place besides my desk was really set up to have a standing area. So that was a problem. The other day, you know, I went into a doctor's office for an unrelated thing and I needed to have a blood test taken. And so I got in a fight with the nurses where they said, you know, we need you to sit down to take your blood. And I said, no, you don't understand. I can't sit down. And they said, well, we need to have you sit. We can't take your blood unless you sit down. And, you know, I know that they were concerned about if I faint, they don't want me to hurt myself. So it was reasonable. But I, you know, I'm like, I have a medical condition. I can't sit. And so finally they let me lay down and I was able to do it that way. So there was a workaround. So I guess other things, of course, going out to movies on the rare occasion that I do that, it's usually I stand in the wheelchair space, which is empty, and just have, you know, somebody sitting next to me, which isn't great if you're trying to like pass snide comments to other people. But you know, I can deal with that. Restaurants, it's pretty common. You know, I will select restaurants based on whether they have higher tables or not. But if they don't, and you know, sometimes people are meeting up as a group and they don't have those, and then I'll just pick up my plate and hold it. Stand there like a dweeb, and servers will come and like offer me chairs, and I'll say, you know, thank you, but no thanks. I haven't gotten my hair cut in a few years. I have my mom cut my hair every time that she visits. So now my hair is getting very long, but you know, it's coronavirus. Nobody has to see me. And this is a podcast, so nobody cares. So it's just little things like that, where once you can't sit, you start to realize just how often you are expected to do that. And if I can jump off that question just for a little while. So even because, of course, you know, my friends, my family, people that I have known for a while, they're aware of my condition. They know I can't sit down. Occasionally, they still offer me a chair or something just without even realizing it because it's so automatic, you know. But what I've come to find is just that the subtle social dynamic shifts when you can't sit down. Mm. It just has this way of making everybody awkward. I mean, I remember there were a few times when I was working in my office job where I would come into a meeting and explain the situation and say, listen, so I'm just going to stand here. Well, those meetings had a habit of wrapping up pretty quickly. Just me standing sent that signal of like, okay, guys, it's time to go. Or, you know, if you come into, you know, a friend's house or something and they're watching TV and you're just sort of standing in back of them breathing down their neck, they understand, but it's still kind of awkward. Or if you're at a restaurant and, you know, everybody's sitting at the table and I'm holding my plate and I'm a little bit too high up to hear conversation and you can't really talk back and forth with people. So there's a lot of like, you know, even though people on the whole have been very understanding and try to be accommodating, it's just not being able to sit just injects that slight note of weirdness.
Yeah, no, I think that makes total sense. And that's something that I wouldn't even have thought about.
Yeah, I mean, neither would I.
You talked about having to kind of fight that that nurse for the blood test. Have there been other situations where you've had to, in a sense, where you had to advocate for yourself harder for something that you needed that people were like, no, you have to sit down for this, and they
didn't get it? So the only one that I've really lost, and I have not found a way around this, and, you know, I'm part of a sitting disabilities group and I've talked to many people. And as far as I know, no one has really found a good, reliable way around this, is airplanes. Because there is actually a legal requirement that you need to be seated, and have, you know, your seatbelt fastened. And, you know, I've written to disability lines, you know, because each airline will have like some disability office that you can write to. You know, I've gotten notes from my doctor. I've talked to the flight attendants beforehand. And there's sort of no way around it. That is a time when I have to sit, at least during takeoff and landing and turbulence. And otherwise I'm, you know, popped up and I play the role of the bathroom attendant of like, no, it is open. I am not waiting. Please, please go in. But yeah, usually if I'm fighting with people, it's pretty subtle. And usually it's a situation where, for example, you know, a server is aggressive about offering me a chair and I don't need one, where the intention is very much to be polite and to be concerned about my comfort. It's just coming from a lack of really knowing what my situation is. So I think thankfully, you know, I've been to doctor's offices before where they try to get me to sit to take up my blood pressure or whatever. And I'm pretty stubborn, so most of the time I win those. like I said, it's pretty much the airplanes where I... there was one time when I was at a work conference, and I was, you know, there was a talk going on in this auditorium. And so, of course, I couldn't sit in the seat. I was standing in the back in that sort of passageway. And an attendant came and said, you know, excuse me, you have to leave. And I said, well, no, like, I can't sit down. And they're like, well, you need to be in a seat or you need to get out. That's the fire code. And eventually I just left because I'm like, I can't sit down. So.
Yeah. I on kind of related notes, I'd love to talk a little bit about how this has affected your relationships. You talked a little bit about support from husband and family and friends, but I'd love to hear how has this affected that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been very difficult. There were a few sort of more distant friends or acquaintances that I kind of used to keep in touch with. And once I had this sitting disability and all my problems with sciatica, I was running around to these doctors and I sort of ended up getting dropped. And I understand the reason for that. It's because I would have these casual friendships and, you know, my friends would tell me, you know, about this great vacation they went on or their hiking trip or whatever. And the only news I ever had to bring to them was, yeah, I went to the doctor and they still don't know what's wrong. You know, I'm trying this medication, but I'm having terrible side effects. So I wasn't very much fun. So those people who weren't really close to me and didn't feel that sense of loyalty that you have to your close friends, I think they sort of just stopped talking to me a lot. It's been, obviously, the travel restrictions make it very difficult to meet up with people. There's a very limited number of activities that we can do. One thing that we started doing, so me and my now husband, although, you know, we started dating after I started having this problem. But we were hosting these parties regularly for a while. And, you know, I would plan these big menus. But the advantage was everybody could sit and have fun. And then I'd play the hostess and just doing all the cooking and getting things. It was a socially polite way to keep me on my feet, to keep me moving, which I found more comfortable than trying to like awkwardly stand or find a weird position to be in. So it's things like, let's find ways to bring people to us, that we do. So yeah, it is kind of like it, and like I said, when you do meet up with people, a lot of times there's that note of social weirdness of like, you can only go to these certain restaurants and have a good time or whatever. So it does affect relationships. That I'm kind of difficult to deal with sometimes, especially when I have to travel.
I mean, it just adds an extra layer of stuff to think about and to prepare for.
Right.
So with having to stand or lie down all the time, what are some of the health issues that you need to be on the lookout now, things that might arise from this?
Right. And so this was something that kind of caught me unawares, as if the sciatica wasn't doing it enough. And so I'll just like go back and share my little story in the state of ignorance that I had at the time. So leading up to, this was like in the late spring and summer of 2018, that was probably my worst period where, I mean, I was cramping constantly. I couldn't lay down for, you know, more than 20 minutes at a time, or I'd get these huge cramps. I mean, I would be on my feet for over 20 hours a day, which if you can just imagine, you know, not sleeping, just standing. And so of course my legs were really painful, but I started to notice, you know, my legs got really red. And then they got really swollen. I couldn't get on any of my shoes. You know, I had to wear my mom's gardening shoes to work because that was all I had. I couldn't really bend my ankles or my knees. I certainly couldn't touch my toes because my legs suddenly didn't bend. And I didn't bring this up to any doctors or really try to figure out what it was because I was afraid it was something that would be preventing me from having surgery. So later, you know, once I was able to rest and recover, and, you know, after that, I started working from home more. And then when I was able to lay down, that problem went away, or at least got much less severe. So now I've done a lot more research into this. And for standing especially, there actually has been a pretty good deal of research done on what can happen to you if you stand for too long. And that's been of interest just because there are some professions, you know, teachers, operating room nurses, some factory workers, that sort of thing, who have to be on their feet all day. So it's an occupational health concern. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that will happen is you have these pumps in the veins of your legs, well, in all of your veins, really, that send blood back from those veins up to your heart again. But the thing about that is, that you can't really make them stronger. They're only so strong. You know, there's nothing really other than that to keep blood flowing through your veins. So eventually, if you're on your feet all day, just the force of gravity and not really being able to strengthen or condition those veins, because there's not like a muscle that you can strengthen or exercise to work on that, eventually your veins will fail. And then that's called, you know, chronic venous insufficiency or chronic vein disease or venous reflux. It's a couple names that people use. But then you can get quite a few other effects effects from that. And varicose veins is a common one. And then edema, which was my problem with the swollen legs. That's another thing. So basically there's a bunch of circulatory issues that you can have just from standing too long. And I wasn't aware of that. Also in other people, and I haven't had quite as severe of cases with this myself, but it's definitely common among others. But you get a lot of foot and knee and hip problems just from being in that all day. You have this synovial fluid, which is supposed to be cushioning some of those joints. And when you're standing, you displace that. And usually, you know, if you're periodically sitting down or you're resting, that gives that fluid kind of a chance to flow back in and, I don't know, rehydrate, I guess. Mm-hmm. But when you're standing all the time, it's so much easier to wear away at your joints. So you end up having a lot more problems there. And this is one thing that I don't really have a lot of scientific evidence on, but it's just because I don't know of any studies about people specifically who can't sit down. Mm-hmm. And this is just coming from the people I know, but it seems that neck problems are also a pretty big concern. And I know I've had that problem myself. And the reason for that is, you know, if you can't sit down, like if I'm working on a computer, I lay down, you know, on a couch or a bed, and I have to like tilt my neck up so I can be looking at it. And over time, that really can cause neck and upper back problems. And I haven't really been able to find a good way around it so far. So yeah, it can actually just not being able to sit can in turn lead to all these other health problems, which may not seem related to the initial thing. Like, you know, why are my veins related to my back problem? Mm-hmm. It's just, that's a downline effect of the not being able to sit. So yeah, there you go. There's some fun health problems that you might get.
Yeah. So can you combat this by more frequently alternating between standing and lying? Are there any other things that you can do to kind of make sure that you are not exacerbating that more than you need to?
Yeah. And so it kind of depends on, you know, because I can speak for myself, but other people do have different medical conditions. Mm-hmm. So some people, you know, will have to lay down or whatever. They'll have a different fix they need to do. In general, for the vein problems, compression socks can be, they're sort of my number one line of defense. I mean, in the summer, I'm always wearing my compression socks. And then laying down, and if you can, elevating your legs can be helpful with that as well.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a little bit more. You found, you're part of a support group for folks with sitting disabilities. How has that been helpful, or how have you been able to help other people in that scenario?
Yeah. So that was just like a mind-blowing kind of thing. So what happened to me was, you know, so obviously this started in 2017, and I was kind of sitting sometimes, but really awkwardly up until mid-2018. And after that, I really just decided I can't sit at all. But I had never heard of anybody with a similar problem. Mm-hmm. At that time, I didn't really know that not being able to sit and disc problems could be related. So, you know, as far as I knew, I was just this anomaly. I didn't really know there was a name for it. I didn't know anybody else existed who was like me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it turns out that a lot of people have the same mobility issues that I do of transportation. So a lot of people with sitting disabilities can't really go very far, which might be why we meet each other.
Yeah.
But anyways, I learned about this book in a blog by this guy named Rick Lunkenheimer. And he also had a back condition and a sitting disability, and he wrote a memoir about it. And he was also part of this Facebook group. And so I read this, and I just like started tearing up and crying because, you know, when you can't sit down and like nobody else really understands what that's like, you have this kind of time, or at least I did, in my mind where I'm thinking like, am I just crazy? Is my perception of the world just skewed? Like, is my perception of my pain just skewed? Like, is there something just, am I seeing the world in some completely different way that's wrong somehow? And just to read his story, which in so many ways matched up with mine, and he struggled with a lot of the same things that I struggled with, it was really just a change of attitude of like somebody else is actually going through this. Mm. And then joining the Facebook group where, you know, people will post pictures of things like, you know, the modified backs of their car, or, you know, they'll just need to vent about a bad doctor's appointment, or, you know, having to stand in the waiting room because they were told not to lie down and there aren't chairs or like a bench that's accommodating for them. You know, it's just like, wow, this other people share this problem too. Yeah. And so since then, you know, I've talked to, you know, normally over the phone or through a video call, but I've talked to several other people, you know, really person to person. And then I've messaged with many people in this group. And, you know, it's just been very interesting because it's a global group. People come from all walks of life. It's a good cross section of society and everybody's kind of dealing with the same thing. And just, I'm really impressed sometimes just by the ingenuity of people, just by how positive of an outlook they can have, you know, after having suffered with this so long. And sometimes I can also relate to, because I think everybody, and this isn't even necessarily just true of sitting disabilities, but many kinds of chronic pain, you know, even if a person isn't depressed, they'll go through periods of depression, when it just seems like, you know, this thing, this pain will never go away. They don't know how to conquer it. They've lost so much because of it. And, you know, I definitely went through my own phases. So, you know, it's nice to be able, I mean, nice in a cathartic sort of way, I guess, to see people going through a similar thing and maybe to be able to reach out and offer support. And I can't tell anybody that it's going to get better because in many cases, I don't know that it will, but at least I can say, I understand.
Yeah,
I've been there. And so it's kind of nice just to have that community and to have, you know, people that you feel safe venting with when sometimes, you know, it just seems to get to be a little bit too much.
Yeah, no, I'm that's with a lot of medical questions. That's one of the first things I want to know is, have you met other people who have been in the same scenario?
Yeah.
And hearing the support, and I love the idea of that they're giving you ideas for how you can adapt and how you can structure your world to be able to still work for you.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful. I mean, Facebook, social media gets a ton of flack, but it's so great that we just have that as a platform that we can communicate with people all over the world, you know, in real time. And that's okay now. Because before, you know, had this happened 20 years ago, I'm sure people were in the same situation and not this other kinds of chronic pain, as I'm sure you've thought of. And they maybe wouldn't have easy access to that community. So I can see that being really hard.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know, I've been intrigued by hearing how the pandemic has affected different people in different ways. And you, in a sense, with having such a travel restriction placed on you, you know, maybe there was already some of the isolation that a lot of other people are now feeling as part of this. I'd love to hear, how has this time been affecting you?
Yeah, right. So that was actually kind of my thought when this happened and all of a sudden nobody can travel and everybody needs to be able to work from home and do everything remotely. And of course, it's sort of annoying that, you know, for good reason, you have to wear a mask everywhere and can't go places. But part of me just feels this little bit of like Schadenfreude of like, now you have to try to get everything done from home. Now you're not allowed to leave the house. Like now my condition doesn't seem so weird if I have to say, no, I need to do this thing via video call. Mm-hmm. It's like, everybody's doing that. It's fine. So, you know, everybody of course has some things that they wish will pass eventually with all these coronavirus restrictions, and I'm no different. But in a way, it's like, I'm kind of hoping some of the changes we've made and the behaviors that have become socially acceptable will continue past this pandemic. Because if we can do more things over video chat, I am 100% on board with that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I work in the theater industry, and the push to make more of these things digitally accessible is like, this is obviously what we need to do for now, but that opens a huge wave of making it more accessible for people who in regular times wouldn't be able to come to the theater because maybe like you, they can't sit So I was just curious as to how that had been different for you as somebody who already had some of these restrictions kind of placed on her just by life.
Yeah. So I think I'm one of the rare people where maybe that worked in my favor a little bit.
Yeah.
In theater, you know, that's really tough because it's sort of unpredictable anyways. And of course, having to like invest in a lot of new resources when you are probably not making so much money anyway, that's rough for the industry. But I'm hoping the long-term consequences will be great for people like me and people with other conditions where they are not so mobile.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so as we kind of wind down, I typically, I say that these are going out to two different audiences, one who maybe has or could have this kind of experience, maybe somebody who has back pain and they haven't been able to find a solution for it. And then on the other hand, it might go out to people who may never have this condition at all, may not be close to anybody who does have no experience with it. So what would be maybe some advice you'd give to somebody who is maybe beginning to deal with this versus, and what would you want people to who will never deal with this to still understand about this kind of condition?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I guess to anybody who is maybe dealing with this and didn't know that it was a thing or don't know what to do, just realize that there are other people out there that are weird in the same way that you are. And that's okay. They can understand it. And also don't be afraid to stick up for yourself. Don't be afraid to say, you know, I rarely have problems if I just say I have a back problem, I can't sit down. Usually people are very understanding. And if you explain it and have the courage to stick up for yourself, people will be more understanding than you think they are. And to anyone who is not dealing with it, but they're like, what the heck, what is this? I would challenge you to think, like, when you go through a day, look at all the times you're sitting, look at all the activities that you need to be sitting in order to do, and then think about how you might restructure and do those things differently if you couldn't sit down. And I think you might be surprised by some of the things that you're doing, which would no longer be accessible to you. So that would be my advice and words of wisdom.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. All right, before we close out, is there anything that you wanted to make sure that you got to in this interview that we haven't?
I think you did a pretty good job covering the basics.
Awesome. All right. Then, first of all, thank you so much for joining me on this. I really enjoyed hearing this information and hearing what this was like, because again, something that most of us probably have never really thought about. Before we go, is there anything that you'd like to plug for yourself? Social media, projects, whatever.
Yes, I would. I will definitely take that chance. So if you are curious about the topic of sitting disabilities or what I do to deal with mine, or just have some questions about sciatica or back pain, check out my blog, which is myuprightlife.com. Mm-hmm. Use the www or don't, it doesn't matter. I have links on there to the sitting disability site. I have links on there to Stuart McGill's site where his books, Back Mechanic and Low Back Disorders, are on sale through there. So that, I guess, is my only plug.
Awesome. And I'll make sure and put that link in the show description as well so people can find you and read more about this. I know I'm going to go ahead and plug that into my RSS feeder because I'm definitely interested in hearing more about this as you continue to work on this for yourself.
Yeah, it's probably the only blog you know about sitting disabilities. So
It is. Absolutely. Once again, thank you so, so much, Krista, for joining us and being willing to talk about this part of your life.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Hannah. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, folks, that's our episode. Come back next week and you'll hear me interview somebody else about something entirely different. And we will see you then.